When Borgnicht came home at night to his children, he may have been tired and poor and overwhelmed, but he was alive. He was his own boss. He was responsible for his own decisions and direction. His work was complex. It engaged his mind and imagination. And in his work, there was a relationship between effort and reward. The longer he and Regina stayed up at night sewing aprons, the more money they made the next day on the streets. Those three things, autonomy, complexity, and a connection between effort and reward, are the three qualities that work has to have if it is to be satisfying. It's not how much money we make that ultimately makes us happy between 9 and 5. It's whether our work fulfills us. If I offered you a choice between being an architect for $50,000 a year and working in a toll booth every day for the rest of your life for $100,000 a year, which would you take? I'm guessing the former, because there is complexity, autonomy, and a relationship between effort and reward in doing creative work, and that's worth more to most of us than money. Work that fulfills those three criteria is meaningful. Being a teacher is meaningful. Being a physician is meaningful. So is being an entrepreneur. And the miracle of the garment industry, as cutthroat and grim as it was that it allowed people like the Borgnicks, just off the boat, to find something meaningful to do as well. When Louis Borgnicht came home, after first seeing that child's apron, he danced a jig. He hadn't sold anything yet. He was still penniless and desperate, and he knew that to make something of his idea was going to require years of back-breaking labor. But he was ecstatic, because the prospect of those endless years of hard labor did not seem like a burden to him. Bill Gates had that same feeling when he first sat down at the keyboard at Lakeside. And the Beatles didn't recoil in horror when they were told they had to play 8 hours a night, 7 days a week. They jumped at the chance. Hard work is a prison sentence only if it does not have meaning. Once it does, it becomes the kind of thing that makes you grab your wife around the waist and dance a jig. The most important consequence of the miracle of the garment industry, though, was what happened to the children growing up in those homes where meaningful work was practiced. Can you imagine what it must have been like to watch the meteoric rise of Regina and Louis Borgnicht through the eyes of one of their children? You would learn the same lesson that little Alex Williams would learn nearly a century later, a lesson crucial to those who wanted to tackle the upper reaches of a profession like law or medicine. If you work hard enough and assert yourself and use your mind and imagination, you can shape the world to your desires. In 1982, a sociology graduate student named Louise Farkas went to visit a series of nursing homes and residential hotels in New York City and Miami Beach. She was looking for people like the Borgnicks, or more precisely, the children of people like the Borgnicks, who had come to New York in the great wave of Jewish immigration at the turn of the last century. And for each of the people she interviewed, she constructed a family tree, showing what a line of parents and children and grandchildren, and in some cases, great-grandchildren, did for a living. Here is her account of subject number 18. A Russian tailor artisan comes to America, takes to the needle trade, works in a sweatshop for a small salary. Later takes garments to finish at home with the help of his wife and older children. In order to increase his salary, he works through the night. Later, he makes a garment and sells it on New York streets. He accumulates some capital and goes into a business venture with his sons. They open a shop to create men's garments. Their garments are a better quality than what is available in the New World, and they soon discover a great demand for their garments. The Russian tailor and his sons become men's suit manufacturers, supplying several men's stores. The sons and the father become prosperous. The sons' children become educated professionals. The Russian tailor's family tree looks something like this. The first generation was a tailor. He had three sons, all of whom were garment makers. He had two grandsons, both of whom were lawyers.